sick and tired of making excuses for you two. You're an embarrassment to the department. You're off the case and off the force. Your badges, your windbreakers, now. Now! I ain't got all day agitating my sciatica. I'm too old for this. Now get out of my sight. Thought you were badasses, huh? Real badasses work together.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 37, for the week of July 7th, 2014. I am Fool Pitier, David T. Cole, and I'm here with Buncey the Vampire Slayer.
Meet Mr. Pointy.
Wing Chun Practitioner Tara Ariano.
You will call me Mom!
And coming Omar Gallega.
Omar coming.
Welcome!
As
we alluded to in yesterday's mini, it is Badass Week, so here we are recording our big episode for Badass Week. We will also have three more Badass Minis coming after this, but I just wanted to note for the purposes of posterity and anyone who might be writing a book, we are recording this on the 4th of July, America's most badass holiday, if I do say so, as a Canadian. And with us to celebrate this important theme week on Previously.tv, which we'll also be having all badass content every day this week, is Omar. Welcome back.
Because Badass Week, right?
Exactly. Yep. Yeah.
Exactly.
You know
you're half right.
All right. So for Badass Week, we thought what we would do for this episode, which are recording early, as we said, so that we can bring you something, even though it's a holiday. We're going to go through some of our favorite TV badasses. But we've broken it down into categories, and we're all going to give our picks. So let's get right into it. Tara, your favorite badass military or badass mercenary kind of person?
This was a tough one for me until it came to me, and then I was furious that it wasn't the very first thing I thought of. Ooh. Mine is, and this may have some crossover with Dave's, I should say, we all are coming to this blind on each other's list.
Indeed.
So we are, all of us are hearing everyone's answers at the same time you are.
Dun, dun, dun.
Brock from the Venture Brothers.
Ah, good.
Yeah. Great badass haircut. Yes. Blonde curly mullet. He's a giant man. He can punch a Bigfoot and just about any other thing that may come his way. Robots, cyborgs, aliens, stretchy people. Brock is the best, and I like him even better after he goes back to... what
Sphinx.
Sphinx, thank you. The fake G.I. Joe.
As I let the dog in.
With our other good friend who is a sub-pick for this category, Shoreleaf.
And a testament to his... badassery is the drop in the quality of the show when he sort of fell into the background with the ascendancy of Sergeant Hatred / Venture.
So true. I know they're currently working on a new season, and I really hope that Brock is front and center now that Rules of Engagement is finally over after its improbable 16-season run. So that's my pick, Brock.
To Omar.
Well, Brock was very high on my list, but I ended up going with Titus Pullo from Rome.
Good answer.
One okay, of the two sure. Roman centurions of the 11th Legion.
Yeah.
13! Just
great, great badass face.
Yep. Yeah.
Face of steel. Very loyal friend. You get a sense that he's a much kinder person than he is on the battlefield. Just an all-around good guy. Guy you want next to you on the battlefield, you know, being a badass, killing... Who are they fighting all the time?
Or siring the half-prince of Egypt.
Exactly, yeah.
Furthermore, the one to tell his good buddy Lucius Verinus about what the clitoris is and why you should pay attention to it, which is also a pretty badass move.
That is the badass move. Yeah, so Titus Pullo was mine. I loved that character, and I still miss it. Even I'm getting into Game of Thrones now, and I kind of wish those two characters were in Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's a good crossover. Sure. I'm down with that. Sarah?
I considered putting the father of our country, George Washington, on turn.
Mm-hmm.
He's actually not that much of a badass where we are in the show right now, yet he's kind of getting his ass kicked. So I went with Mrs. S. from Orphan Black.
Good one.
Ooh, okay. More of a mercenary tip.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But she always seems to have weapons, connections. There's always a getaway car. She cooks. She dresses appropriately for badassery, but also looks chic. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure whose side she's on except her own, which is what makes a great mercenary. So she's my pick.
You know, you're correct with the fashion because she wears lots of stuff with little pockets everywhere. And you know, all those pockets are stuffed with things that will kill you.
Yes.
My pick, actually, I have two. My first pick, I thought it was going to be picked, but it is our Badass Week mascot on the site. And that, of course, is B.A. Baracus.
Yes.
Bad Attitude. From the A-Team, Mr. T, one of the most iconic people from the 80s. I think we forget how big of a deal he was then during the A-Team.
Speak for yourself.
Rocky thing. Well, okay, I think culture forgets, you know, as we die off.
Culture's stupid.
Yeah.
Rocky 3 was on AMC yesterday.
Clever Lang.
I watched it from start to finish and made a note aloud to Tara.
She did.
That I wanted his earrings for Christmas.
And don't think I'm going to forget when I go to the craft show, because I
never
won't.
Forget.
But here, you haven't seen Rocky 3 yet, Tara.
No, I know, but I know what his feather
No, I'm just saying,
like.
You have all this to look forward to.
Well, we have a long weekend ahead of us.
What
Why
is
don't
Hulk Hogan's character's
with
name
Mr.
in that?
T.
Thunderpants? What's his
no,
name?
No, that's Hulk Hogan. He's Thunder Lips.
Thunder Lips. That's it. Yeah.
Yeah,
indeed.
Ooh.
And my second choice, more on the mercenary side of things, is Deadwood's Dan Doherty, Elsewhere Jin's faithful henchman slash enforcer slash all-around kind of loyal puppy dog with like a Cujo esque quality to him. So that's that one. All right, let's move on. Badass villains, Tara, what's your pick?
I'm so sad that I'm going first, because obviously mine is the best one. It's a little something we call Gus Fring of Breaking Bad. Mm-hmm. The best. I mourn him still. This was a hard thing for me to go around, because nice. He was my favorite the whole way through. I love his organization. I love how meticulous he is. I love that he did not give a fuck about anybody. He did not. He would take out anyone in his path. And I love that about him, and I love it still.
All right, Omar, what's your badass villain pick?
Gus was high on my list too. I ended up with Mr. Burns.
Ah, what a great pick! Yeah,
just the ever living, ever kept alive by all of his various ailments.
Ahoy, just, ahoy!
I think he's been very influential on other villainy on TV. Like, I think that anytime it's hard to introduce a villain on TV now that isn't doing something that Mr. Burns has done at some point on The Simpsons. So, yeah, Mr. Burns.
And as all good villains do, he attended Yale University.
Excellent.
Sarah.
Mine is the mayor from the third season of Buffy. I don't know what it is, but his balance between like cheery Midwestern.
He was one of our, what did we call him, Tara?
Cheerful villains.
Cheerful villains, yeah. Gleeful, yeah.
Just a, like his golly gee way of speaking, but then he's eating spiders, plural, from this evil box, and then he can turn on a dime and just drop the temperature in the room like 50 degrees and is really like terrifying, the more so because he sort of bonds with Faith in that season and has this creepy yet sincere father-daughter relationship with her. And I think that balance of like the villain actually still having good bits before he turns into a giant snake is really cool.
He gave her a beautiful knife.
He did.
My badass villain pick is, of course, Al Swearengen. And as Tom Nuttall would say, all those that disagree suck cock by choice. All right, moving on to badass TV siblings. Tara.
Mine is a little bit of a zigzag, but I hope you will allow it. Suzanne and Julia Sugarbaker of Designing Women. No one could uncork a totally awesome feminist stem winder like one Julia Sugarbaker, the great Dixie Carter.
True.
And even though Suzanne was usually just kind of a dink, she also was a badass in her way. She was an amazing beauty contestant. She had a pet pig. Her best friend was... oh my God, now I can't remember his name. Anthony?
Let's
I'm so
say
embarrassed. The guy
he
that
just
died.
Last week.
Yes, he did. Meshach Taylor. So the two of them together were an amazing team, and the show really suffered when Suzanne left for a lot of reasons, but mostly because it lost their sister dynamic. They are my pick.
Omar, badass TV siblings.
Stick with me on this one because it doesn't seem very obvious, but Dean and Hank Venture from the Venture Brothers, who I thought were the most annoying characters for the first season or two, and then when kind of turn the corner when you find out that they're clones and that they've died over and over again so many times. And at the latter seasons, I've actually really come around on them and have gotten to really love them, and that they're going through the usual teenage angst, you know, with this insane dad and all this crazy stuff happening around them. I've really come around on them and really gotten to like them as characters.
They're a lot more fun since their personalities diverged, I think.
Yeah, they used to just be pretty much identical.
And on the badass tip, Hank as Batman.
Batman. Yes.
Sarah.
Speaking of clones, going back to Orphan Black,
you got a whole gaggle to work with there.
There's a bunch of different sort of constellations of this answer. I think I'm going to go with Allison and Felix.
Love it.
Because obviously, Allison and Felix, they have this like wonderful exasperated relationship that is so true, even though they didn't grow up together.
Yeah.
I just think it's great. And Felix just is used so perfectly on that show. Like, they know exactly how much of him is enough. And
that is true.
Seemed like a good time to shout that out right now, which I'm doing.
And Allison really does turn a corner on the, you know, the badassery, too. She kind of goes from meek to kind of, you know, scary sometimes. So, you know, even though she's not, you know, when you lay out the character, she's not supposed to be the badass. She certainly develops into one. Good pick. Badass TV siblings. I'm going from the characters that are known as the cousins, but are in fact twin brothers from Breaking Bad.
Ooh.
Lionel? That might be wrong. And Marco Salamanca.
Yeah.
Meeting their end at the hands of Hank.
Yes.
And
their boots alone. Man. So jealous of your pick now.
They are like, they didn't get the job done, but man, they had all the trappings of a real badass sibling pair. And I gotta kind of feel that if they do this Better Call Saul thing, that somehow they're gonna work some of their previous exploits into it somehow, because I know Vince Gilligan was a huge fan of those characters, and they were supposed to have a bigger role, but
I was gonna mention that. Do we remember what happened there?
No, not off the top of my head, but I do remember reading it, and it was like a scheduling thing or something like that. I think he couldn't get out of something else he had to do, that actor. So anyways, so that is my pick for TV siblings. Let's move on. This is a good category, folks. Badasses over 50.
Mine is, this is another one where I thought Dave might pick it, Skips from Regular Show.
Oh, no, I didn't, but that's a great answer.
Skips is hundreds of years old. He's a white gorilla. He's voiced by Mark Hamill. He can do anything. He's really super tough, and he's very protective of Mordecai and Rigby and everybody who works at the park, and I love him. And every time we get an episode that's about his backstory, it's like the best of the season.
Yeah, he's called Skips because he was in love with a lady who made him skip, and then he just kept on skipping.
And now, so every time you see him, like when he comes into a scene, he doesn't walk, he skips everywhere. That's his only way of moving around, which is amazing.
Yeah, that's great. Omar.
I was for sure that Mike Ehrmantraut was going to get picked right away, so I went with Lionel Luther from Smallville.
Oh, nice.
Who I dubbed the Magnificent Bastard for years and years.
Yep.
As played by John Glover. Great hair, great voice, great everything. He would always sort of be a step ahead of Lex on anything Lex wanted to do, and crush his dreams and spirit along the way. He was just a great villain, and I was very sad when he was finally, I guess, pushed out of a window was how he died unceremoniously. But he was a great... I'm surprised they kept him on as long as they did, but I think he, by all accounts, was an awesome actor to work with, and everybody loved him, so I think they just kept him around because they liked him so much, and we're afraid to get rid of him too soon, but he was always a badass.
Nice pick.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sarah.
I can't believe this wasn't picked. Dorothy from the Golden Girls.
Oh! Maybe we were all saving it for you.
Oh, thanks, guys. Because best are you fucking kidding me stare in the business to this day, now and forever. Dave.
I have two. Jack Bristow from Alias.
Yep.
every time I think of Jack Briscoe from Alias, I always think of that graphic for the Television of Pity story you did, Tara, with the Budweiser of beards when he was...
Oh, yes.
When he was undercover.
Budweiser King of Beards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Budweiser King of Beards.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. But what a great character from start to finish. Yep. His noble end at the end seemed very fitting. Usually, I think, when a show wraps up and they feel the need or just have the freedom to kill off characters, it seems sort of arbitrary. See, like Anya on Buffy. But this one felt right, and it was a great end to a great character. Second choice, who gave me one of my top 10 TV scenes of all time from The X-Files, Cigarette Smoking Man, the guy who pulls all the strings in the background, including... the Buffalo Bills will never win a Super Bowl as long as he's alive.
Shout out Joe Reed.
And for that, we salute the cigarette smoking man. All right, let's flip this. Badasses under 20.
This was my category, and I had a hard... I'm upset to go first because I'm afraid I'm going to pick someone. So in the interest of not taking anyone else's, I'm going to say Carl from The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Omar, was this your pick?
No.
Okay.
Nope.
He's pretty badass, you guys. He manages to make that hat look not completely stupid. And he's...
Interesting.
He's killed... I said not completely, guys.
I've been on
he
the record.
He's come a long way.
Yes, he really has. He totally has.
Yeah. All right, look. Here, my other picks are ones that I'm pretty sure everyone else is going to pick, so I'm just going to say them.
Let's all also consider that he ate... one giant fucking tub of chocolate pudding in one sitting.
That is true.
That's pretty badass.
I retract my earlier bitchy comments.
Oh, yeah.
This is, I'm saying Carl on the assumption that others are going to pick the other ones I'd say. So before we move on, let's make sure that that's not the case.
Your entry had, like, what, 17 asterisks there? That was crazy.
Okay, well.
All right, Omar, what's your pick? Was it one of Tara's? Let's find out.
Tara, was one of yours Sally Draper?
Another Tara update.
No, it was not. But good pick.
But what did you say, Omar?
I asked if one of hers was Sally Draper.
Yes.
I actually did not go with that one. I just this week started reading Game of Thrones, and I'm already halfway through the first book, and I'm kind of watching the show as I go. And I can already tell just from the first book that Arya Stark is going to be my jam. I really love that character, and I've seen enough ahead to know some of the things that happen with her. So Arya Stark is my pick right now.
Watching the show, too?
I'm going to be watching it as I read the books.
Oh, okay. Oh,
so
cool.
I'm about two episodes into the show and halfway through the first book.
Yeah, she's a great character. Mm-hmm. That is a good pick. Yeah, on the show. I mean, on the show, she's great. I don't know
about
the books.
She's wonderful in the book.
What do I got? Time? It. No. Sarah.
This is kind of out of left field. It started out as me really trying to pick someone that I knew nobody else would pick. But then the more I thought about it, the more it made sense. Sharon Chersky from My So-Called
Life. Nice.
John Ramos is doing a little chair dance in his car listening to this right now because she's the best. She is forthright about her feelings, even when they're negative. She's sex positive. She's a problem solver. And she manages to make that little top ponytail look kind of good.
True.
Tara, let's hear yours
now,
because I'm realizing that maybe the character I picked might be over 20. So
let's hear.
And I'll choose which one of those is the best.
Okay, my alternates were Veronica Mars.
Okay.
Oh, good one.
And Buffy.
Okay, I picked Faith.
Oh, good.
Do you think she's under 20 in the show?
She is when it starts, I think.
Yeah, okay, because she has, you know, a lot of the qualities of Buffy, but none of that, you know, goody two-shoe stuff holding her back, at least at the start. So for that, I give her the badass edge over Buffy.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. Okay, this is a great topic, guys. Badasses of the business world.
This is a tough one because I love them both. I'm just going to say them both. There's only two. Roger Sterling of Mad Men, obviously, who another one who doesn't give a fuck and is drunk all the time and always looks on point, by the way.
I can see Roger Sterling actually, you know, through his drinking and not giving a shit, turning into Steve Austin from his episode of 30 Rock.
Yes, yeah. Totally. I just, all his one-liners, he's another one who I think is deployed very well on that show. It would be so easy to overuse him because he's the best.
Agree.
But they're very judicious with him, which I appreciate. And my other one's funny, I should say 30 Rock, is Jack Donaghy, who's always right about everything. Even when he has a business setback, he always finds a way to solve it. My favorite way he wriggled out of it was, two. One was selling the terrible credits of the Deal Breakers talk show to be played in the background of soap operas, tied with selling the terrible Couchtown couches for torture devices. So, those are my picks.
Omar.
Lionel Luther would have been good for this one as well, but I went with one where I barely even remember the show, but I remember the character much better. Patrick Tripp Darling III from Dirty Sexy Money, as played by Donald Sutherland.
Nice.
Oh,
nice.
Yeah.
He was pretty badass, and I barely remember the show, but I remember him loving Donald Sutherland so much on that show. So Patrick Tripp Darling III.
Good one. Sarah.
Mine is an actual badass of the actual world, Marcus Lemonis.
Oh, nice.
Thank you, nobody else, for picking him. He is the, whatever, host and wheeler dealer on The Prophet, and has that B. Arthur, what the fuck are you talking about, stare down pretty well. So he's my pick. Mm-hmm. I also enjoy when he just storms off. Like, people are too stupid to deal with, and he's just like, peace out. Good times. Call me.
Dave.
My pick for badass of the business world controls the world's largest economy is an agent, manager, CEO, and high priest. We're talking about Charles Foster Oftenson, the guy, the silent manager guy from the show Metalocalypse.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Who is not only great at all those things, but turns out he's a badass when it comes to hand-to-hand combat.
Yep.
And is one of the most intriguing characters on that show.
He is the best.
That show has a surprisingly interesting mythology running through it that I'm eager to catch the resolution of and what part he plays in it, because he's an awesome character.
He was dead and then he came back, right?
Yeah. And there was like question of whether he was like possessed and you know and all this sort of stuff. And yeah, that was great. By the way, did you see the rock opera special they had this year?
I did.
That was good, eh?
Yeah,
that was really good. I mean, I don't like that kind of music, but I was really into it. That was good. All right, let's move on. Badass death dealers, people that just know how to kill.
I have two sides of the coin, a good guy and a bad guy. I'll give the good guy first, Raylan Givens of Justified. Dahoy. He's the most amazing shot on television, and looks really good in his jeans. And the other is...
I consider it a personal failing that I didn't have Timothy off of his pants at the ready, anticipating that choice for this. I have failed you all. I am sorry.
I thought you were stalling for time now so you could do that.
Yeah, me too.
What, me? Do that?
So you can drop
I don't know what you're talking about, guys.
That's some great vamping, Dave.
I don't even know where it is anymore. I don't even know if I have it. Oh, yeah, there it is.
Off with his pants.
God bless him. And the bad guy is Charlie from Scandal. He's the guy who's played by George Newbern. Lately, he's been a little bit less badass because he's sort of been Quinn's mentor in the dark arts of dark arts. But I just love how matter-of-fact he is about everything. He's one of the few characters on that show who can deliver that weird Shonda Rhimesy dialogue without making it seem super mannered and stupid and like everybody else. And again, it's a common refrain. He doesn't give a fuck. He has no moral center. He has no qualms about what he's doing. He's not constantly dithering about it like some hucks we could mention. So that's why he is my pick.
God, Huck. Like, he's one of the worst characters on television, like ever.
Agree.
All right. Sarah. I mean, Omar. Sorry.
I am going with Walter White, if only for the mid-last season jail killings. What was it, like 11 guys in 2 minutes?
Yeah.
That well-orchestrated prison killing all the potential stoolies.
Yep.
So, yeah, that just for that, I think Walter White takes it for me.
And previous to that, his chemical bomb.
Yeah.
And his first real appearance as Heisenberg.
Even killing the guys in the van with the chemicals in the very first episode.
Yeah.
Let's be real. He's killed like 6 dozen people by the time the show is over. Yeah. Yeah. Sarah.
I actually had Walter White's Pontiac Aztec as my honorable mention.
Oh.
But I went with Mike Ehrmantraut.
Nice.
Category.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Kindly grandpa assassin.
Yep.
Love that guy.
This one's for Omar. Daryl Dixon. From The Walking Dead.
Yeah, that would be my wife's pick.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Does he ever miss? No. Does he ever not hit him square in the head? No. So when it comes to death dealing in the zombie apocalypse, that's the guy you want in your back pocket, right?
But is it really death dealing?
Oh, that's a good question.
Oh. Asterisk.
Yeah, asterisk. 61. Yeah, totally. All right. Badass nerds, Tara. Badass nerds.
Mac from Veronica Mars. She's the best. And I love that actress, Tina Majorino. And even though this is not really TV related, her hair in the Veronica Mars movie was amazing. So Mac is my pick. Omar.
Chloe from 24.
I'm glad someone picked her. Nice one.
Yeah, she and I haven't watched the new the British one, the new one, but up until I stopped watching it, she was always the best. And the one time she pulled out the machine gun was awesome.
Sarah.
I could nominate the entire Team Sunnydale High Library, but Giles.
Yeah.
Not really a nerd, more stuffy and British, but we'll grandfather him in because it's Giles, and that's what you do.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I would give that allowance for sure. This is where I put Walter White as my second pick, figuring that somebody was going to snag him at some point before this. My pick doesn't look like a nerd, but when you think about it, he obviously is a nerd, and that's MacGyver. You know, who else can make, you know, bombs out of pipe cleaners and, you know, pocket lint and just make shit happen? Nerds, guys. That's what nerds do.
Let's just note at this point, we have two mullets on the list so far. Two mullets. Will there be more mullets before our list is over? Let's all listen and find out.
Let's find out when we move on to badass legal eagles.
My pick is obviously Rake. Just kidding.
Wait, what was his name? Steakface.
Steakface. Yeah. I don't even remember what his real name was. It doesn't matter. His name was Steakface. I have two, and at the risk of picking one or both of any of the ones that Sarah might pick.
Get on with it!
Ben Stone of Law & Order.
Damn,
that was
it.
Mine.
Oh, no. Oh, you both did. Yeah. Shit. Then forget that. You guys can talk about him because my other one is Diane Lockhart of The Good
Damn
Wife.
Damn it. It's okay. I have a third because I thought this might happen. Please continue.
Leaving Ben Stone for Dave, I will just say Diane Lockhart is a really good lawyer. She was amazing this year when she fired the client who was a fucking dick, and she always dresses gorgeously, and her hair is perfect, including first thing in the morning when she wakes up in bed in her also perfect pajamas. Diane Lockhart is my jam forever and ever. Amen. Omar.
I went with not a Law and Order person. I went with Dan Fielding from Night Court.
Oh, nice.
Who to a young person raised a lot of questions about sexuality and the legal system. So, and left me confused for many years about it, and makes it tough for me to take lawyers seriously to this day. So Dan Fielding.
I have so many questions, but let's move on.
Sarah.
First, I would like to say, here's how much of a badass Diane Lockhart's hair is. When I went into the salon and made a hand gesture swooping next to my head and was like, does anyone here watch The Good Wife? They knew exactly what I meant.
Yep.
And that was the haircut I got.
Nice.
Thank you. So my third one doesn't sound like a badass, but he's going on my list because I played the shit out of his video game for the Apple IIc back in the day. And that's Mr. Perry Mason.
Oh, nice. Oh, yeah.
It was a great game. It took me forever to win that fucking case.
Was it
I
one of those
did it.
Text adventures?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I think I played that one too.
Dave.
Oh, that was it. Okay, my choice. Okay, so Ben Stone, we've all established that we had three votes for Ben Stone.
Yeah.
I think mostly I picked him just because of, well, I mean, I enjoyed him on the show. I certainly enjoyed him more than Jack McCoy. I always thought he had something Jack McCoy didn't. And that was probably, I believe that he was like angry and sort of like could go off at any time. That actor, because
yeah,
we know he can,
because
he's loco pants, as Omar would say. But I just want to give an honorable mention to all the lawyers on Century City for being lawyers on a show about lawyers from the future. Century City, this one's for you. All right, our penultimate category, badass canine division.
My pick is the dog that I don't think ever got a name, but the one from American Horror Story who killed the Axeman, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, right.
The one who was the subject of the immortal line, bitches stick together, because it's true. They do. And when I say they do, I mean we do. Omar.
I have backup from Veronica Mars.
Me too.
Sure.
Was
sure.
Such a badass that when they were doing the Kickstarter for the movie, I was like, oh, what about backup? Is backup going to be in the movie? Where's backup?
Yeah.
So, yeah, very good memorable, one. Very great dog.
Sarah.
I was the creator of this category, and I hope everyone interpreted it as animals generally, which is what I did. My number one, of course, is Backup, but my second one is The Chase's Cat.
Oh, nice.
Never seen, often referred to, the feline Tino of the show. Had great influence, but invisible.
Felino.
Yeah. Oh, two words. Felino. Dave.
Well, I did Backup too, but if we're expanding it a little bit, but just a little bit, all the dire wolves from Game of Thrones are pretty badass. I mean, you don't want to mess with them.
Nope.
I can't tell one from the other. I know one's called Ghost.
Yeah.
Does that count for something?
Summer, snow, ghost. I'm all in it right now.
Nerd. All right. Our last category. From Sarah, I'm guessing. Badass Motor Pool. The Badass Motor Pool.
This was a tough one for me because I never notice cars unless they're terrible, i.e. the aforementioned Pontiac Aztec. Yeah. But I'm going to say the one from S.H.I.E.L.D. because it looks cool in pictures and it has powers, I think. It's a really cool vintage red
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I was thinking S.H.I.E.L.D.
Sorry, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., not the S.H.I.E.L.D.
Lola? Is that the car's name, I think?
Sure.
Because it's red?
Yeah, absolutely. No idea. That's my pick. Omar.
The General Lee, which is about as iconic a Southern car as exists in the universe.
Yeah.
It has its own museum.
Business on front, racist on the top. General Lee.
The car probably has a mullet.
Yeah. Sarah.
Brandon Walsh's car, Mondale. Just kidding. No.
What was that?
That was his car. His first car.
I know, but was it? It was like a hatchback or something?
It was a station wagon, right?
Okay.
Sarah?
No, I think it was just like a two-door sedan. Yeah. It was maroon. I know that. Mm.
But it wasn't like a Gremlin.
No.
Oh, okay.
No, it was like a, whatever, Le Sabre. It was old.
It was clearly like somebody's grandpa's car that he had inherited.
All right, I put a big bet on what your choice was for your real choice on this, Sarah, so I hope you don't disappoint. Here we go.
Thanks to it losing in King of TV Things Mountain, I'm never letting this shit go. The Knight Automated Roving Robot Car.
Car, yeah.
Did I win? Did you
win? Yes. What was the other? Was there another machine, a tank or something like that from Knight Rider called Juggernaut?
I don't remember that, but there could have been.
All right, we'll look it up after the show, and we'll get our people on it and find out. I am sure we did a vehicle mini a long time ago in the first iteation of the podcast.
I know we had a game at some point.
I know I've given this answer, which is the, I think, TV movie Damnation Alley. Which, here's the description of it. In a post-apocalyptic world, a group of survivors travel and find other settlements in huge custom-designed all-terrain vehicles. Starring Jan Michael Vincent and Jorge Pepper, George Peppard.
Oh, boy.
And their RV was like a big kind of... You know what APCs look like? Army personnel carriers, APCs?
Yes.
Sort of like that angular... Sort of like the Batmobile from the new ones.
Yep.
But like if you imagine the Batmobile as a Winnebago, that was this thing. It came out probably when I was somewhere between 6 and 8 or so. And it was the most amazing thing I've ever seen in my life. Like I wanted a toy of it. And I looked it up. And there's nothing to it. There was fucking nothing to it. It's just like a roving... It's like a roving... longer version of the souped up armored car from Dawn of the Dead remake, you know, where they put the spikes and everything in it. And they, it's like
very
that.
Road Warrior-ish.
Yeah. It was sort of like that, except didn't look as cool. I don't know why I picked it. I'm stupid.
Just take a kid.
Kid. All right, it's time to go around the dial. Everybody brings a little something about TV to the table. We're going to start with Sarah.
Hi, I am going to recommend Restaurant Startup, which is a new show that's going to air on Tuesday on CNBC, I think at 10 o'clock. If you like Top Chef's Restaurant Wars episode, The Prophet and or Supermarket Superstar, it's kind of a mashup of those.
Mm.
Tim Love and Joe Bastianich hear pitches for restaurant ideas from two teams. One team wins, and then they have to kind of do a pop-up restaurant in like 48 hours, and then Tim and or Joe might invest in it. So there's like negotiations, there's biz dev nerd stuff, there's Joe Bastianich pretending he invented the everything bagel. Okay, he actually doesn't do that in the pilot, spoiler, but he says it in his book, and I think it's really funny, and I'm never going to stop bringing it up.
So there's a little Shark Tank to this as well, it sounds like.
Yes, there is quite a bit of Shark Tank to this. And this is actually where, like, Joe is sort of a douche on MasterChef because his only job is to, like, be withering, and he's actually not that great at it, but he has a lot of experience with restaurant startups. That's all he really does. So here you actually get the benefit of his experience, and there's less focus on him having, like, bitchy Michael Corsi lines at the expense of contestants. So yeah, it's good. I am in for a season pass, and if you like any of the shows that I mentioned, I think you'll really like this show.
Yeah, that's the bunciest thing I think I've ever heard.
Yeah, it's pretty buncy.
All right, Tara, lay it on us.
Oh, God.
So, earlier this week, as we record this, our friend and contributor, Stephanie Green, was tweeting on Monday about her dread in watching The Bachelorette, and I tweeted back to her, you know you can stop, because I felt bad that she thought, just because she had pitched it to us at some point, she felt like she might feel she had to be yoked to the show forever and ever. And she tweeted back, it's okay, I just like being a martyr. And I was like, I assigned myself under the dome, so I get it. And I did assign myself under the dome, and the season premiere was, as we record this last week, it's no less stupid than it was last season. Oh. If anything, it is more stupid because they're introducing new characters. You can't have new characters if you're under a dome. You're trapped under a dome. Unless you establish that there's some porous opening to the dome, how would you never have encountered the science teacher before this particular day?
She was marking papers.
Dave, don't make excuses for the dome. I hate the show so much. It's so dumb. You can't understand how dumb it is until you watch it.
And it really is insanely dumb.
It's, oh my God, it's so stupid. And like, anytime you pick, I wrote this in my post about the season finale, which I reread some of my posts from last season, and that's why I decided to continue to write about it, because it actually is fun to make fun of. But the second you pull at any thread about the show, the entire thing unravels. Like, there's so much about it that makes no sense. Even in this premiere, which, by the way, was written by Stephen King, who wrote the book on which this is based, and had a cameo in it for no reason.
Hey, that's Stephen King, guys. Look at him.
Exactly.
He's just getting a coffee.
But he's in a diner. Like, where is the diner getting food from? How are people paying for the food in the diner? What meaning does money have? You're trapped under a dome. And then it made the even worse decision of showing a person outside the dome and a news report about how, and I quote, America is still fascinated by the dome. Like, no fucking kidding, of course! That would be all anyone was talking about. If a dome fell on a town in wherever this is supposed to be, it doesn't even matter. It's all anyone would talk about, including the people of the dome. All anyone would be doing is trying to kill this dome. And yet none of that is happening on the show.
It would be like the CNN with the missing plane. It would just be constant for months.
Except worse, because this is real. It would be something you could see. There would be nothing but news cameras around it all the time and helicopters.
And why doesn't the dome get dusty?
It's such an idiotic show, and it infuriates me that it's popular.
Well,
Under the dome!
The book takes place in like a week and a half. Like, the whole 1,000 pages are just a week and a half. I think are they stretching it out? Like,
I
weeks
guess,
and months?
I oh, suppose. Well, I don't think a huge amount of time has passed since the beginning, but it's enough that there would have been 17 riots by now. Like, every episode should be about people rioting because they're panicking because they're trapped under a dome. Dave.
Can I give you some good news about it, though?
Is one of the most insanely idiotic things I've ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it.
Dumber, that
you
is.
No points, yeah. And may God have mercy on your soul.
Under the dome.
Omar, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say, the good news is, at least in the book, almost everybody dies. So you have that to look forward to.
But now they can't, because CBS has made it such a success that they're going to have to keep everybody alive and keep introducing new people that are like, oh, I was just behind the barn. Fuck off,
really,
under the dome.
Crap. Seriously.
Well,
exactly.
Shit.
Omar.
World Cup, which is continuing as we record this and will be continuing after this is online.
Are you sure it's going to continue now that America's been knocked out?
How dare you bring up the World
That's
Cup what I was gonna say. Independence Day?
As far as America's concerned, it's over. It ended last week when America was eliminated. But I was going to say, if you are still watching, I think today as we're recording this was Germany and France, and there's Colombia was going to play. If you are still watching, if you are one of those soccer holdouts that's enjoys it, please, please watch the Univision broadcast
yes.
instead of ESPN. It's so much more fun.
It is. I was watching the USA game, and I'm like, no, you know, I'm not going to understand it, but it's going to be better. And sure enough, it was great. Like, they get so excited. And
every minute move in the game.
Oh, mama! They say, I counted four oh mamas. It was great. And one of them was just like, it dribbled near the corner, and then it was like a three throw near the corner, but not a corner kick. I was like, oh, mama! It was great. It really is.
My Spanish is pretty good, and I still can't follow everything when I watch it on Univision because they talk so fast on it. But it's still so much more exciting than the ESPN. The ESPN is so boring.
Yeah, good call. Good call. All right, so my pick is something to avoid, and that is the new FX show, The Strain.
Oh. Ew.
Boop. So if you somehow have not been exposed to their marketing campaign, which is everywhere, like everywhere, maybe it's just LA that's saturated, but it is fucking everywhere, guys. I read the comic that is based on the novel, that, Del Toro wrote first the novel, then the comic, then the show. I'm not going to read novels, guys, cause I ain't got the time and I forget how to read a lot. And, the comic book is supposed to be about vampires, but really they're more like zombies. Vampirism as a disease. And there's a CDC guy and he has to, which is played by Corey Stoll. Miscast, by the way. And
he usually is. So I don't know why he keeps getting work.
I don't either. Everyone thought he was so great in House of Cards. I thought he was terrible. But anyway, continue, Dave.
So it's the story of this old guy from the old world, and he's, you know, encountered these creatures before, and he has to convince everybody. It's just one of those stories. You've seen it 1,000 times before. There's nothing special about this. And it's just very, very poorly done in almost every front. The acting's bad. I think the casting is bad. I think most people are miscast. The old, I want to say, Romanian guy is played by the angry dude from Harry Potter. I want to say, I don't know if he's a wizard or not. And he was in some, he's the Red Wedding host from Game of Thrones.
Uh-huh.
He's the king of, you know, that sets all that up. You know who I'm talking about?
Tywin. Whatever.
No, not Tywin.
No one knows who you're talking about because none of us have watched that episode.
Oh, okay. Well, anyways, you'd know him if you saw him. I'm sorry, I don't remember his name.
Is it the Crouch guy from Harry Potter? That guy? The one who was like the Perv Castle guy in the episode
yes,
that we put in
Perv
the canon?
Perv Castle guy.
Okay.
Yes, thank you. Perv Castle guy from okay. Game of Thrones.
IMDb.
Got it.
The guy, yeah. And he's supposed to be this old world Romanian guy. He's, you know, I think, anyways. The Strain just feels like a show from the 90s, you know, before they decided to like really put
Make
some thought
good.
Into where it was going, what they're going to do with it. I read the 2 of 3 volumes of the story and it just goes nowhere. It's just really boring and the show doesn't elevate the material. And you know, and even the effects,
yeah,
you think they would be really good considering, you know, what Del Toro usually brings to the screen, sure. You know, they are bad. Like they are like, I can see the pipe cleaners and the, you know, and everything at work. This one guy gets bit by the head vampire who lives in a coffin full of dirt. And it just seems like something out of like Babylon 5 from like 98 or something like that.
Seems like it was a real strain on your patience, Dave.
It was.
Is this worse than jazz?
Every time is like the first time.
Is this worse than jazz? Hieroglyph, the show that I was looking forward to because it sounded so terrible. So terrible. Mm-hmm. Has been pre-canceled. Is that what we're going to call it?
Yes.
By Fox.
Yep.
sort of a high budget Egyptian drama. We had stills.
Yep.
We had synopses. We had casting. We had a pilot. The pilot's been shot.
Yeah.
Then it's been canceled. Ripped from us too soon. Stillborn. Mm. So, I have tracked down on the internet, it provides, the early draft of the pilot episode.
Oh my.
Yes. So here are selections from the script, and then we could decide, was the hieroglyph pilot worse than Jazz? Tara, please set the stage. Here we go.
The setting is a world just next door to our own, across the gulf of what might have been. A world in which the ancient Egyptian Empire, its customs, its gods, and its pharaohs never fell out of power. It's not ancient Egypt. It's the world ancient Egypt might have become. The time period, costumes, and overall look of this place is ambiguously modernish. But like the Colosseum still looms over modern Rome, New Gyptica boasts a skyline in which weathered old sphinxes still stand amidst towering modern skyscrapers. And there is magic here. Not the magic of fairy tales. This is a more subtle species of magic. Seductive and dangerous. It's sex and blood. It's the charge in the air before a storm. And within this world, we track the story of a thief, drawn into the shadowy corridors of power to become the right hand of the most powerful man on the planet. As such, he must either learn to navigate this labyrinth of secrets and intrigue, or be swallowed by
it. Oh man, I can't wait for this. Let's hear some choice quotes from this show.
This was no pirate attack. Perhaps the Jackal Parliament.
Someone breached the Imperial Horde, a repository of the blackest magic the Empire has ever known, and we don't even know what was taken?
I'm the Pharaoh, not your chum.
The scrolls were locked up so we could sleep at night, assured that godlike power was not out there for any fool to stumble across in a street market. That was why we left the mystic sciences to the scholars and engines of the new magic. It was for the sake of security!
It's a 5-pound roll of parchment with a higher magic yield than all the engines of the Empire combined.
So how good does a lock charm need to be to open a 42-character combination lock?
Did you really think we'd never catch you? I didn't think the Pharaoh's guard could catch a cold.
So what? Anubis might materialize and just level New Gyptica out of boredom?
You come in here with your smug sunglasses like you're still some big god's damned deal. But you know what I see? Meat. I just see meat.
Code phrase. Fox blood. Hold, please.
We've got a storm cell forming over the Scarab Gate District.
Surprised to find out you're not the biggest croc in the rushes?
Wow. All right, guys. So, that was selections from the hieroglyph pilot script. Perhaps an early draft, but a script nonetheless. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about it, guys. I will just put
we
out
have
there.
To.
Yes. Put out there
I
that
don't
I.
Think there's anything left to say after Scarab Gate.
I think we were robbed of one of TV's potentially most magnificent shit shows of all time here. Maybe even rivaling Century City. I am sad. What's your guys' take on this?
I don't say this lightly, but I think this would have been worse than Jazz, based on what we've been exposed to today. Speaking of the strain, I feel infected. Sarah?
I agree with both of you, somehow. This would have been all the train wrecks piled on top of all the car wrecks, and yet I'm kind of sad that we didn't get to see it, especially since I'm just trying to imagine how working actors would try to make this happen. It's not possible.
Yeah.
Omar?
I'm heartbroken just that I won't get to hear a Tara rant about it or Dave do a farts post about this show. It could have been so great.
Yeah, let's not also forget that because this is the Egypt that would have survived to the present day, it is entirely possible that we would have got some sort of new Gyptica jazz compounding the problem.
Right.
Sucking us all into his amazing jazzy vortex and destroying
Black Fox
the universe.
Singularity.
Yes, exactly. Destroying the universe as we know it. All right, guys, it is time for the canon. And, of course, Omar being our guest, you have brought us something for consideration. What do you got for us?
Well, last time I brought an episode of South Park that should probably not have gotten into the canon, but somehow we swung it through. So I'm going to bring another controversial pick this week. I'm submitting Season 1, Episode 6 of Adult Swim's Rick and Morty, which is the Dan Harmon, Justin Roiland show that kind of came about when Community was kind of in flux. We'll talk about that in a minute. But the show, in a nutshell, is about Rick Sanchez, a genius inventor and scientist, and his grandson, Morty, who is a pubescent loser at school. Rick lives with Morty and his family, his daughter Beth, played by Sarah Chalke from Scrubs, her very dumb husband Jerry, played by Chris Parnell, and Morty's sister Summer, played by Spencer Grammer. And the show started as sort of a take on the relationship between Doc from Back to the Future and Marty, and has kind of morphed from that into something else. But that was really the initial impetus for it. Justin Roiland had done this series of shorts with those two characters doing really horrible, dirty things, and it kind of turned into this. So Rick and Morty, they go on crazy adventures to other planets and dimensions because Rick has access to all of those things as a genius. In episode 6, Rick Potion number 9, it starts with Morty at school unsuccessfully trying to hook up with the prettiest girl in school, Jessica. He's rebuffed, of course, and even in typical high school, typical high school hallway sequence, we're already barraged with a lot of background jokes, which this show in the animation and in its humor has a lot of stuff going on in the background, like the principal explaining that the high school dance is about flu awareness and that you don't bring dead babies to Passover. A jock tells Jessica, you want good words, data languager. So you get a lot of this kind of background noise of jokes kind of flying back and forth as the main plot is going. So Morty explains his woes to his dad, Jerry, who is probably the wrong person to ask about relationships and is kind of smacked down by Rick. Clip number 1.
You're missing the point, Dad. I don't want girls. I want Jessica.
Ah, well, I remember feeling that way about a young lady named your mom. And that's not an urban diss. Your mom was my Jessica. I remember the first time I saw her. I thought,
I should get her pregnant and then she'll have to marry me.
I beg your pardon, Rick. Inappropriate.
Sorry, please proceed with your story about banging my daughter in high school. I'm not sure you want to take romantic advice from this guy, Morty. His marriage is hanging from a thread.
And it kind of is. Rick explains that love is just a chemical reaction in the brain, but Morty is persistent. He interrupts Rick in the garage as he's working and asks for help. Clip 2.
Hey, listen, Rick. You know how you said that, you know, love is a chemical and all that stuff from earlier? Well, I was thinking, you know, could you make some sort of chemical thing happen inside of Jessica's mind? You know, so where she falls in love with me and all that sort of thing? You know, like maybe make some sort of love potion or something?
Morty, that's such a poor use of my time. It's beneath me. Hand me the screwdriver.
You know what? No, Rick, I'm not going to hand you the screwdriver. I'm not going to hand you anything ever again, Rick. I'm always helping you with this and that and the other thing. What about me, Rick? Why can't you just help me out once for once?
You're growing up fast, Morty. You're growing into a real big thorn straight up into my ass.
Rick reluctantly agrees after Morty's fit about helping out Rick and never getting anything in return. Clip number 3.
All right, Morty, I just gotta combine it with some of your DNA.
Oh, well, okay.
A hair, Morty. I need one of your hairs. This isn't Game of Thrones.
Ow!
Morty goes to the dance where there's a flu awareness rapper on stage rapping about the flu, and I will read you his rap verbatim. Flu, yo, you gotta be aware of the flu, up in the air. I'ma get me a shot, make the flu go away. Flu-hating rapper just rapping away. You're welcome.
Omar, I enjoyed your version of it, I think, more than the show. That was great. It really, really spoke to me.
Morty goes to the dance and slathers love potion on Jessica, but it turns out Jessica does have the flu, which was one of the things that Rick thought might possibly go wrong, but probably not. It makes the potion spread to everyone else. Soon, Morty is being loved on by students and faculty alike, and he has to flee with Rick so they can find a cure. Unfortunately, Rick's cure involves using praying mantis DNA and turns everyone into horrific praying mantis creatures who now want to mate with Morty and then bite his head off. Rick admits that his plan might have been a little off. Clip 4.
Okay, well, sometimes science is more art than science, Morty. A lot of people don't get that.
Meanwhile, while all this is going on, Jerry is questioning his wife's love and starts being very insecure and jealous based on Rick's criticisms. That jealousy leads him to Beth's office, where she is a horse surgeon. She works with a guy who actually is trying to have sex with her, but then he turns into a giant praying mantis, as one does, and Jerry beats him with a crowbar. Soon, Jerry is a shotgun-wielding badass, and he and Beth are on the run, blasting away creatures and getting turned on by it. Clip 5.
I wish that shotgun was my penis.
If it were, you could call me Ernest Hemingway.
I don't get it, and I don't need to.
Rick and Morty start assigning blame for what happened. Clip 6.
Boy, Morty, I really Cronenberged the world up, didn't I? We got a whole planet of Cronenbergs walking around down there, Morty. At least they're not in love with you anymore, though. It's a huge step in the right direction.
Oh, my God! It's a living nightmare! How could you be so irresponsible, Rick?
Me irresponsible? All I wanted you to do was hand me a screwdriver, Morty. You're the one who wanted me to buckle down and make you up a roofie juice serum so you could roofie that poor girl at your school. I mean, are you kidding me, Morty? You're gonna try to take the high road on this one? You're a little creep, Morty. You're just a little creepy creep person.
I should have mentioned that the antidote that Rick created actually turned everybody into these horrible Cronenberg creatures, these horrific mutant things, which is actually a step down from the praying mantises. And I love that they don't even address what Cronenberg means. Rick says that he has one more idea that might work, and we cut to the next day when the virus has been cured and everything seems back to normal. Rick and Morty are thrilled that things will work out. Rick finally gets Morty to hand him that screwdriver for his gadget, and then the two of them are suddenly blown up and killed instantly in the garage. Two other Rick and Mortys appear, the original ones, and it turns out that Rick and Morty from our dimension have gone there to replace the Rick and Morty from the other dimension who would have died at that moment. Rick says they'll replace them without missing a beat, but Morty is visibly traumatized by seeing his own dead body and in helping Rick has to bury himself in the backyard. This last stretch plays over a Mazzy Star song, Look On Down from the Bridge, which
I thought was also
down from The Sopranos. I think that was in an episode. We see Morty watching his boring life now through new, horrified eyes. The credits roll, but in an extended tag sequence, we find out that Jerry, Summer, and Beth are all living happily in a post-apocalyptic world without Rick and Morty, while Cronenberg Rick and Cronenberg Morty from another dimension of Cronenberg creatures have done the same trick after they accidentally turned everyone in their dimension into normal people. So it's in that last stretch that I think marks the turning point in this series and elevates this episode. It's really dark. It's unexpected. It's game-changing. And even though it's a reset, it's actually not forgotten. It actually comes up in future episodes. Morty has a conversation with his sister about it later, reveals it to her. And we also find out later that Rick is part of a council of Ricks from all these different dimensions. So as crazy as this plot twist is, it's actually part of a bigger mythology that does continue to pay off. They don't just forget about it. And it demonstrates that the show can really modulate its tone and that it can dig deeper than just belly laughs. So I will tell you why you shouldn't vote for this into the canon. First of all...
That's Archa.
Yeah, I'm taking a turn here. There's three reasons why this show is a long shot for the canon, and I'll address each of them. First off, it's only been on for one season. How good could it possibly be? Second, the show is co-created by Dan Harmon, who has worn out his goodwill even among people who were once fans of Community. It's easy to be skeptical of any show with his involvement, especially one on a small network where he can be even more self-indulgent and uneven than he was on Community. And long shot number three, it's based on two characters who were barely veiled takes on Marty McFly and Dr. Emmett Brown from Back to the Future. So I'll address those three things. Number one, how good can it be in one season? Surprisingly good. The show found its footing very quickly, and the episode I'm submitting was the one where I think it really came into its own and really took a step in a darker direction than it had been going. And as we've seen this season, there have been a lot of good shows that have come fully formed, like Playing House, like Broad City, Review, shows that in just their first season already felt like they were fully formed, and I think Rick and Morty was one of them. As to Dan Harmon, well, I'll just say that the story structure on Rick and Morty is very strong. The pop culture jokes are thick, but I feel like it's a lot less of a Dan Harmon show than it is a Justin Roiland show. Justin Roiland is an incredibly talented animator. He was responsible for the cult classic House of Cosby's, and he voices the two main characters very, very well. If you didn't know Dan Harmon's name on it, I don't know that you'd be able to tell just from watching it that it was that his involvement is so deep. And yes, it's Marty McFly and Doc, but I think it takes it in a very different direction. I think it has evolved a lot from the original shorts that this was based on. So we've been blessed with a lot of great shows in their first seasons this year, and I feel like Rick and Morty stands tall among them, especially for something on Adult Swim. So with that, I submit Rick and Morty, Episode 6, Season 1, Rick Potion Number 9, to the canon.
Reverse psychology will never not work on us.
Oh, no.
All right. Who wants to go first here? Sarah? Tara?
Sure. I'll go first. I was on board with this from the minute there was sort of a swallowed belch in the middle of a sentence.
Oh, you should go back and watch the pilot, because
the first
like
one has a lot of that.
10 minutes of that.
I just love that he just is talking and belching, like has been drinking a beer, whatever he's doing this whole time. I loved the Mazzy Star. I loved the principal and someone chasing Morty at school once everyone's infected with Morty love. And being like, the principal and I have discussed it, and we're both insecure enough to agree to a three-way. Like, there's a lot of good lines like that. My one issue with it was not any of the things listed by Omar, but rather that it did kind of drag a little bit for me in the middle. But I thought it, you know, it got me back with that just random turn where they're, like, burying themselves, and then they come back and have bones for heads, and it was just very weird, but also very confident, which I liked, that I wasn't entirely sure the episode worked, but it was like it just kept going and didn't look down. And I liked that about it. It was not something I would have checked out for myself, but I'm glad I got to have a look at it. Tara, what do you think?
Omar, you know I treasure you.
Yeah.
You're one of my favorite people.
Thank
and
you.
I admire your moxie in submitting this. And there's no way that you could know that Dave and I tried to watch the pilot of this show and turned it off in, I'm going to say, less than 60 seconds.
I don't think it was that short, but we didn't make it through anyway.
It might have been, there's a lot of, because we like most Adult Swim, I won't say most, we like probably 50% of what Adult Swim puts on, which is more than what we watch of any other network probably.
I would say we like mostly the Adult Swim stuff that isn't overtly just for stoners.
Yeah,
which
although,
is a lot of it.
Yeah, that's true. And so we, you know, there's a lot of new shows where we give it a shot and sometimes it works out, and this was not, this would be in the super jail category of like we tried. So I felt watching this whole episode, which is the first one we ever watched, the quality of the animation really put me off. It just looked
really
cheap and crappy to me. Dave tweeted yesterday about the eyes, and that was something that really bothered me too. That they were like weirdly scribbly looking,
puckered asshole eyes.
That was Dave's
yeah,
term.
Why is yeah? That's sort of gross.
Well, they that's what it like is, and that's why it's disturbing.
Buttholes.
Yeah. So yeah, this would be in the not for me category. So I agree with what Sarah said. It dragged in the middle, and this might be a show where if it were a 15-minute Adult Swim show,
yeah,
or like, you know, 10 to 12, whatever they actually work out to when they're only half hour, maybe I would like it better, but it felt like there was a lot of retreading in the plot, and I also, but mostly the problem is I just did not think it was that funny.
Somebody on Twitter, when I tweeted about the eyeballs, somebody said, yeah, you know what, and let me see if I got that, Sean Tohill, credit, hat tip to him, said, yeah, you know, where other shows are zany, this show is just manic, and it's hard to get behind that sometimes, you know, where it just seems like I need to have like ADD to like appreciate this show sometimes. There are a lot of things to split the difference. There are a lot of things that I did enjoy about this episode. The Mazzy Star ending was like just pitch perfect. Like,
yeah,
I thought
the best part.
If they could have like taken what they did there, I think to Tara's point, shorten the episode and add more of that sort of quality and take on things into the episode, I would have liked it a lot more. I found not so much dragging in the middle, but I thought it took a while to get going at the start. It does have this exponential curve of plot development that I think was considered, and it pays off at the end of the episode, I find, you know, when they're, you know, they're dimension jumping and everybody's dying and things get super crazy super fast, but like the journey there is was a little slow for me. The episode sort of reminded me like this is the Simpsons toaster time travel episode 20 years later. You know, for the next generation of people that find Simpsons too slow. You know what I mean? Some of it worked for me. A lot of it didn't. There were some tone issues that I found, like some jokes where I'm like, that's just not funny. And this is the number one. Omar alluded to a scene between the wife and her working partner, Davin. And here's that scene where he sort of in the middle of it catches the love flu.
I better get going. Jerry's been texting some pretty high-maintenance stuff.
Beth.
What is it, Davin?
Just once. I'd like to know what it was like to give your son a bath.
What?
What does Morty's skin smell like? How soft are his privates?
Let go of me, Davin!
Huh? Like, that was sort of a, like, it was like, and
Jessica bending over at the dance was another one in that area.
It was just
a bit much.
It was a bit much. Maybe a little more than just a bit much, too, I find. I found it, like, scenes like that made it hard to enjoy other scenes sometimes, you know what I mean? Like, you're like, well, now I'm a little dirty, and I missed a few jokes while I was washing that off, kind of thing.
Well, and it's a little self-conscious, too. Like, I didn't find it offensive, but there were a couple like that that I was like, don't try so hard.
Yeah. I really enjoy the new Doc Brown character. I think his tone and his attitude, the thing about not a lot of people understand that about art and science was a great line and a great bump to commercial. There's things to like about this show. I don't think it's canon worthy. I do think I can see Dan Harmon's fingerprints all over this. He is obsessed with gimmicky storylines. You know, there's lots of time travel stuff in Community, and I think this, you know, obviously it's about Back to the Future characters, you know, sort of. So it's going to come into that, but I can see Dan Harmon's contributions to this pretty clearly. I would give it like a B minus C plus kind of episode for me. The tonal issues really threw me off, and I kind of wish if it could be an 11-minute episode, I think they would have something. You know, if somebody could re-edit this into a probably pretty good episode with the material they have right now, I find.
Yeah, and I feel like the season got, I mean, to take one episode from the middle of the season is tough because the season did build on itself, and by the end you kind of got a little bit more of a sense of where Rick is coming from and why he does the things he does and why he treats Morty the way he does. And I think it's the rare Adult Swim show where there's actually some continuity and some building of the characters over the whole season rather than just resetting every, you know. I think like Venture Brothers, that's one of the few Adult Swim shows where I feel like the characters grow and evolve over the seasons. And I hope this one does that.
If nothing else, it certainly is bold, as Sarah said. I mean, you got to admire it for just going gunning it and, doing 280 in a 100-mile zone, and that's what they did. Just, it wasn't canon worthy for me. I feel like I just wanted it to be tighter and funnier. Mm-hmm. Shall we put it to a vote, guys? Mm-hmm. Tara?
I love Omar.
Uh-huh.
But I did not care for this episode.
Sarah?
I'm gonna vote
Nate. Oh, sorry. Sarah?
I also love Omar. I liked this episode a lot, but didn't love it. I agree with, it should have been 11 minutes, but it wasn't. It's very close, but I'm going to have to vote no also.
I'm neutral on Omar, and I also didn't like it.
Dave?
You're welcome for that.
Rick and Morty, Season 1, Episode 6, Rick Potion, Number 9. I'm sorry, but you're not inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yeah.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It's time for Winner and Loser of the Week. Tara has our winner.
Winner is Reading Rainbow, which LeVar Burton is currently trying to revive it via Kickstarter. And it was announced by the time you hear it, last week. But this week, that it set a new Kickstarter record for the most backers of any project. So I assume that means we'll probably be seeing Reading Rainbow soon, which is good because it was a great show.
But this project, unless this expanded, isn't for a TV show. It's for a web property.
Like a pay property, too, isn't it?
Yeah. So it's not like he's bringing Reading Rainbow back to PBS or whatever. I mean, who knows if this is really popular, what could happen. But as I remember it, when the story first started, it was basically going to be a website, and I don't even know if it was a web series. I think it just sounded like interactive. So, you know, before you get too excited, know that.
All right, sorry.
And Seth MacFarlane's involved too.
Well, then he's an even. Oh god.
Well, hey, well, let's give him a break. Cosmos was pretty, you know, decent show, and he put his power behind that. Loser of the week.
I have the biggest loser of the week. It's the biggest loser, because Jillian Michaels is out again. I really hope she stays quit this time. I mean, I don't mind her, but I think it's pretty telling that she's out after calling bullshit on a couple of production manipulations and then just deciding she couldn't anymore. And I wish her well, because she was like, when Rachel, the latest season's winner, showed up on the finale looking like a kite with a dress on.
Yeah.
She and Bob both looked horrified, mm-hmm. and Jillian was tweeting steadily about it and like made sure people understood that it was an issue for her, which I think was good, because that show can be, I mean, I'm always going to watch it, but it can be a little scary. Yeah. So yeah, they have two new trainers to replace her. Not sure how that's going to work out.
I'm
but
sure
she was a big part of the
I'm
show.
I'm sure the new trainers will have contestants peeing blood in no time.
Yep. What? Good luck, guys.
That happen?
Uh-huh.
Cool. You know what time it is, guys?
Game time.
Game time.
Time to pee blood.
It can be two things. Oh my god! I thought that was just tomato juice.
Why would it be better to pee tomato juice?
I thought it was just but now it's blood, and we're all sad because Dave died.
Change the subject.
This is the sixth game time of the season. Sarah has 1 point. Value Guess and Tara are tied with 2 points each.
Mm-hmm.
Today's game time comes from Newlywed as this airs. I believe he's getting married this weekend, if memory
serves. Dave Coulier?
And frequent game contributor Andrew Jull, I believe. J-U-H-L?
Yule?
Yule? Yeah, that sounds better. Mm-hmm. Andrew Yule, congratulations on your nuptials. He earns himself an extra credit.
Excellent time to get married.
Absolutely.
I recommend.
That's right. You'll share maybe an anniversary with Buncey here.
Neat.
He has sent a game called Long Running TV Show. Come on down.
Ooh.
I will read you the name of a TV show from TV Guide Magazine's 60 Best Series of All Time. Mm-hmm. That was from December 23rd of last year. Players will take turns guessing how many episodes they think were in that TV show.
As of
July 4th, as of the taping today.
Okay.
TV movies and other associated specials do not count. Only true episodes of the series. Price is Right rules are used for bidding. The player who guesses closest to the actual number of episodes without going over gets 1 point. If a player correctly guesses the exact number, they win 5 points.
Wow.
Ooh.
All right. Tara, Sarah, Omars, how are we going to play this game?
Wait. Sarah first?
Sarah.
Yeah.
Bunting.
Yes. Okay.
Tara Ariano.
All right.
Followed by our Texan friend, Omar.
Yep.
All right. So, Tara starts the bidding, number one. I mean, Sarah starts the bidding.
Jesus Christ, Dave.
Wait, all right. Wait, hang on. Wait, wait.
Wait.
God damn, Cole.
Hungover much?
How many things are there for me to say, shut the fuck up?
All right, here we go. Question number one for Sarah.
Yes.
The show, fittingly enough, Sopranos. Opening bid. Hmm. And we have 58. That sounds right.
Okay.
Questions, you mean?
Yes. 57.
Okay. And a tiebreaker.
Yeah, 50. Yeah, okay. Right. Whatever.
Sarah.
I'm going to edit all this out.
Yeah.
Okay.
My bid is... I've suddenly lost the ability to count. My bid is 85.
Tara.
I'm going to say 68.
Omar.
I'm going to say 70.
Point to Sarah.
Woo!
So close. 86. 86 episodes. All right, Tara.
Yeah.
The Cosby Show.
The Cosby Show. I'm going to say 120.
Omar.
140.
Sarah.
130.
It was 201.
Holy shit.
201. Wow. So that's point to Omar, correct?
Nice. Yeah, good job, Omar.
All right, Omar, your first bidding, Columbo. Columbo.
Oh, Jesus.
Not including TV movies.
Not including the TV movies.
I'm going to say 100.
100, says Omar. Sarah?
105.
Tara?
Can we be Dick's Price is Right style?
I
106.
Okay, so it was 69. Nobody, everybody guessed way
everyone
over.
Overbid.
Way over. Sarah, Taxi.
Taxi. Golly. 105 again.
105. Tara.
130.
Omar.
I'm going to say 70.
It was 114.
Damn.
Point to Sarah.
Sarah.
All right, Tara. Big Bang Theory.
Oh.
Big Bang Theory to date.
Fuck.
Big Bang Theory. Doing some math. 22 episodes.
And okay. And then I'm going to say 150.
Omar.
I'll say 100.
Sarah.
175.
Point to Tara. 159.
Shit, I almost said 158. Not that would have gotten me 5 points.
So
that's
did
what I.
I
almost said.
Omar. The Waltons. The Waltons.
Jeez. 120.
120, says Omar to Sarah.
I have no concept of how long that was really on. 160.
I'm going to say 190.
190 is our closest bid. 221.
Yeah, that one, that ran forever.
Wow. 221. Sarah, Modern Family, to date.
Modern Family, to date. 122.
Tara, yes, Tara.
Sarah's
bid, 122.
I'm going to say 84.
To Omar?
I'm going to say 90.
Omar's correct, 120. 120.
Oh.
Sarah overbids slightly. Slightly. Oh. Tara, Gunsmoke. Gunsmoke.
Oh, fuck.
Gunsmoke. Famous, long-running TV show.
I'm going to just go for it and say 300.
All right, 300 to Omar.
200.
To Sarah.
320.
320 gets you the point. 635 episodes
Shit!
Of Gunsmoke.
Oh, my God. Wow.
It's still on then, technically. Yeah. They're filming it in here right now.
Amazing.
Omar, Survivor, to date.
Oh.
Survivor.
Shit.
I'm going to say 250.
250, says Omar to Sarah.
275.
Ooh. Omar took my big, so I'm going to say 251.
Point to Sarah, 428.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. And
Ew.
Sarah gets open nice. Bidding for Breaking Bad. Breaking Bad.
One oh five
says Sarah. Oh, dog ear flap in the background.
I'm going to say 85.
And Omar?
60.
Oh, Omar, so close. Gets it. 62.
Nice.
62.
Oh, of course. What was
All right,
thinking?
Tara.
Yep.
The West Wing.
Can't count.
120.
120 to Omar.
I'm going to say 100.
To Sarah. 140 gets you the point. 154. 154.
Nice.
All right, Omar, The Good Wife.
80.
Sarah. To date for The Good Wife.
To date for The Good Wife. 90.
Tara.
What did Omar say?
80.
90.
I'm going to say 100.
100 gets you the point. I'm going to start using this. Yay! For Tara, 112. 112.
Nice.
Sarah, Homicide, Life on the Street.
Oh, geez. Okay. 120.
120, says Sarah to Tara.
100.
Omar?
125.
Oh, point to Sarah, 122. 122. Jeez. All right, Tara. Yep. Battlestar Galactica 2003.
105.
105?
Yeah, I said 105.
All right, Omar. Battlestar Galactica remake.
115.
115. Sarah.
100 even.
No points awarded. 84 episodes.
Shit.
84 episodes. Omar, Mad Men, to date.
Carry the five.
75.
75, says Omar. Sarah?
Omar said 75. 75. Okay. 80.
80 to Sarah?
No, I'm Tara.
I mean, Tara, my wife, whose name I know.
85.
85, which I sense you were about to say.
I totally was.
You should have followed the pattern. It was right there, 75, 80, 85.
You're
it gets
right.
you 1 point, though. It gets you 1 point.
I'll take it.
All right, Sarah, NYPD Blue.
Yeah. Oh, shit. 118.
118 from Sarah. Tara?
220.
220 to Omar.
150.
Tara gets the point. NYPD Blue, 261 episodes.
Wow. Oh, it goes on for 1,000 years.
Tara, number 17. I'm liking this game.
Spread Eagle.
Spread Eagle.
American Idol, to date.
Oh, no. Oh,
to
fuck.
Date.
Oh, shit.
Not counting the exciting American Idol movie.
Yeah, of course.
And Thor appears in that, but he won't appear on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
250.
250 to Omar.
275.
To Sarah.
170.
Ooh, Omar picks up a point. 502.
Shit. 502.
Oh, shit, of course.
All right, Omar. Here's a big one. The Daily Show, both Craig and John hosting. All
Yikes.
The Daily Show.
I'm going to say 400.
All right, Sarah. 400. Says Omar for a show that's been going on for a decade and shows almost every day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. 1,500.
I'm going to say like 2,000.
Point to Tara. 2,502 episodes as of today.
Yeah.
Sarah. Buncy the Vampire Slayer. So know this one. Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Hang on a sec. It's question number 19, guys. I almost forgot. Buffy.
128.
128. All right. What do you think, Tara?
I'm going to say 150.
Oh, 150. 128, 150. Omar.
135.
Omar. 144.
Nice.
Tara. Ooh. All in the family. Thank you, Pop Filter.
190.
190 for All in the Family. Omar?
160.
And Sarah?
220.
Point to Tara, 210. Mm. 210. All right, Omar, bring us into our first score break. Saturday Night Live.
Oh, Jesus.
Saturday Night Live.
650.
All right. Sarah?
600.
Ooh, Tara?
Trying to do quick math, and it's too quick for me. I'm going to say, did anyone say 300?
Omar said, sorry, I lost it.
Whatever.
650. Yep.
Okay. Okay. I'm going to say 450.
Point to Omar. 769 episodes of Saturday Night Live.
Oh, this game is so close, you guys.
Good.
Omar and Sarah are tied with 6 each. I have 7.
Oh, okay. Oh,
yikes.
Okay, so we're back to Sarah. This is a big one. Big one. The Oprah Winfrey Show.
Oh, Christ.
Yeah.
3,000.
3,000. Tara.
I'm going to say 4,000.
4,000. Omar.
I'm going to say 2,500.
Point to Tara, 4,561 episodes.
Damn.
Tara, The Wire.
60.
60. Omar.
61.
Whoa. Sarah. Is she going to do it?
59.
Wow. Well, guess what, guys? Tara, 5 points.
What?
60 episodes. Nice. 60 episodes. All right. Congratulations. Nice. Omar, Sesame Street. That's Sesame Street. Also a big one.
It's been on since before we all were born.
Yeah. 5,500.
5,500. Sarah?
7,700.
Tara?
9,000.
All wrong. 4,427.
Wow. That's shocking.
Wow, that it?
Yeah.
That's really shocking.
Sarah, Sex in the City.
Oh.
Sex in the City.
Sex in the City. 180.
180. Tara?
100.
100. Omar?
80.
Omar, with the point, 94 episodes. Tara, really? Think
felt
about
like
this
many
one.
More.
Everybody loves Raymond.
210.
210. Omar.
140.
Sarah.
200 even.
211.
What?
Tara, one off from another 5-point grab.
Dang.
Omar, lost. And yes, it is the ABC one, not the Conan O'Brien produced Lost reality show.
So more than three.
And we're not combining the two shows.
112.
112. Sarah.
120.
120. Tara.
This is not my answer. I'd love to say 42, but I'm going to say 140.
Sarah with a point. 121.
Oh.
All right, Sarah, big one. The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson.
Oh, fuck.
With Johnny Carson.
Yeah, the Carson era.
Okay. 3,500.
3,500, Tara?
No, 3,500. 3,500.
That's what I said.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, sorry.
I'll say... it was on for so long, you guys. I'll say 4,000.
4,000. Omar?
2,250.
Tara with the point, 4,531. Yeah. And here, double checking, our longest running show on the game.
60 minutes.
Tara.
Yeah.
The Late Night Late Show Letterman Combo Pack.
Oh.
ABC and CBS. To date.
NBC and CBS.
I mean, yeah, NBC.
Okay. I'm going to say... This is going to sound crazy, but I'm going to say it anyway. 7,000.
7,000. So now we're on to Omar.
4,500.
4,500. Sarah?
6,500.
Ooh. Omar with the point. 5,912. 5,912. All right,
nice
Omar.
Nice.
The Larry Sanders Show.
Hmm. 70.
70, says Omar. Sarah bids next.
65.
Tara?
80.
Tara with a point, 89.
Mm. Oh.
All right, Sarah. Here we go. Law and Order, original Rays. You open up the bid.
Shit.
Ding.
218.
218. Tara?
I'm going to say, like, 450.
450. Omar?
260.
456.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
You guys are not taking advantage of the...
I know.
Add one to the...
you're right.
Yeah, you got a power play position in when you're last. Sarah, the original Dallas.
The original Dallas.
The
gosh.
Original
okay.
Dallas. That was a bid you made. And now we go to Tara.
Okay.
What
you can
is
stop.
Your bid?
Stop it.
I will never stop.
260.
Omar.
230.
What was your guess, Sarah?
Sarah said 220.
All right. Tara with the point. 357.
Jesus.
357. Ooh. Tara, MASH.
MASH? Oh, man.
205. 205. Omar?
160.
Sarah?
250.
255. Sarah
Shit.
With a point. Omar, the Carol Burnett Show.
Oh, Jesus. 260.
260. Sarah.
200.
200. Tara.
One.
Omar with the point. 278. 278.
Really?
Yeah. All right, Sarah. Your show is The Twilight Zone, the original Twilight Zone.
Not the original just Twilight the original. Zone.
Yeah.
95.
95. Tara?
135.
135. Omar, power
100.
Play. Ooh. Tara, guess the point. 156.
Hmm. Oh.
And Tara opens up the bidding for The Mary Tyler Moore Show.
$135.
$135
to Omar. $160. To Sarah.
$140.
Omar with a point. $168. $168. Hmm. And everybody's favorite show about spouse abuse, The Honeymooners.
Omar's first, right?
Yes, Omar.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. The Honeymooners.
$110.
$110 to Sarah.
$99.
To Tara.
What did Omar say?
110.
I'll say 120.
That's good for a point. 195.
Ew.
All right, here's where we put Tara's knowledge to the test. Sarah's going to open up the bidding, though. Friends.
Oh, man.
$230.
Tara.
Yeah, that's a good bid. I don't know. I guess I'll say $250.
Omar.
$210.
$239. Sarah with that point.
Nicely done.
All right.
Ooh, it was a good bid, like I said.
And now we flip the script. The Golden Girls for Tara.
Shit. We'll go $235.
$235. Omar.
$245.
$245. Sarah.
$140.
$140. We'll get you the point. Well, 180 episodes.
Well done, Sarah.
All right, bring us into our second score break for Omar. Open up the bidding, please, for Roseanne.
$180.
$180. Sarah.
Oh, that's a good one. $200.
$200. Tara.
$201.
Tara, finally using that power play. $222. All right, so let's get the scores.
Sarah and Omar are tied with 10 each. I have 21.
Oh, Jesus. It's.
Thank you for
that. I bet 22.
Thanks for that 5-point wire one.
It is anybody's game. Nose hits. Bonk. All right, Sarah. Monty
yes.
Python's Flying Circus.
Ooh.
Oh, my God. 75.
Okay. Tara?
60.
Omar?
65.
45. No points awarded.
No.
Tara?
Shit.
Cheers. 200.
All right. 200. Omar?
232.
Sarah?
205.
Omar, guess the point. 245.
Nice.
And now Omar opens up the bidding for I Love Lucy.
Ugh.
Ew.
Everybody who liked that show is dead now, right?
Yes.
Okay.
240.
And then she's like, the chocolate's going too fast. And she just, where am I going to put them? I got to put them in my mouth. 233, is that what you said?
You said 240.
240?
Pay attention. Quit doing bits.
All right, Sarah.
230.
All right. Tara.
180.
Too many.
5 points. 180 is the correct
Shut
answer.
The fuck up. Whoa. Are you serious? Oh my God.
You going to make fun of it now?
Yeah, Tara. You got so many right answers, so many points, you got to stick them in your mouth.
Yep, that's what I'm doing.
Sarah. Yes. X-Files.
Oh, shit. 150.
All right, Tara.
180.
Omar.
190.
Oh, Omar gets the point. 202.
Shit.
Oh.
Yeah. Also too many.
Tara.
Yes.
Yep. Your show of shows.
No. Oh. I have no...
Yeah.
100? I have no idea.
100. Omar.
200.
Sarah.
150.
Tara with the point for 139. Masterpiece Theater, Omar. Masterpiece Theater. How many episodes of that have there been? Clue, a lot.
320.
Sarah.
1,000.
Tara.
1,001.
1,277.
Damn it. Yeah.
Sarah, the Bob Newhart yes. Show. The Bob Newhart Show.
So the original, not Newhart.
The Bob Newhart Show.
Got it.
Okay. 85.
All right, Tara?
95.
And Omar?
115.
115 will get you the point. 142.
Really? Yeah. All right.
The Shield, Tara, The Shield. Agentless.
Right. 84.
Omar?
60.
Sarah?
66.
88. Point to Tara. 88. To date... The Simpsons, Omar. The Simpsons.
Oh, no.
I think we can all agree. Too many.
Too many. Yep.
310.
310 to Sarah.
350.
To Tara.
351.
Yeah. 552.
I was pretty sure it was over 500, but I wasn't positive.
Way too many.
Yeah.
Sarah.
Yes.
Star Trek original series.
Star Trek original series.
Dude, oh, chomp.
61.
61. Tara?
82.
Omar?
30.
Sarah, guess the point for 61. You said 79, the actual number of episodes. Tara slightly overbids.
I was trying to remember what they said in that Futurama episode.
Tara?
Yeah.
Dick Van Dyke Show. The Dick Van Dyke Show.
90.
90 to Omar?
110.
To Sarah.
91.
Nice.
Omar, 158 gets the point.
Ooh.
And opens up the bidding for the Ed Sullivan Show.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, God.
300.
300. Sarah.
400.
Tara.
401.
Yeah. 1,068.
Shit. Oh, shit. Man. Yeah.
All right. Last lead bid for you, Sarah. Seinfeld.
Ooh. 100.
Tara.
200.
Omar.
180.
5 points for Omar.
Oh!
What?
180 on the nose.
Nicely done.
All right.
Good job.
Tara.
Good seasons.
Yeah.
The Andy Griffith Show.
150.
Omar.
220.
Sarah.
200 even.
Omar with a point for 249. Being the closest to 249.
Gosh.
All right, here's our last question. Omar will open up the bidding for Hill Street Blues.
205.
205. Sarah.
225.
And Tara.
One.
One. Guess you the point. 146 episodes. Let's hear the score.
Okay. Sarah has 11. Omar has 20. I have 32.
Okay. So I guess you won?
I think so.
All right. But we have our shits and giggles question, our unused tiebreaker to do. 2 Dave points for the correct answer. Get it on the nose. 10 Dave points. We're doubling up the stakes. Sarah opens up the bid. For Barney Miller.
Hmm.
Barney Miller on Time. TV Guide's best 60 shows in the history of the universe throughout all time.
131.
131. Tara.
179.
Omar.
170.
Omar gets 10 day points. Wow.
Well done, Omar.
Nice.
That was amazing.
I can't decide if people are going to be super excited by this game or really, really bored.
I liked it.
I liked it too. It was totally fun to play. I'm
entertained by my inability to do multiplication tables persisting from the 80s. Sorry, everyone.
Same here. SNL.
Hey, that was pretty good. We got three,
that was fun.
Three bullseyes, so that was pretty impressive.
that's pretty awesome.
All right, that's it for another episode, guys. We celebrated Previously.tv's Badass Week with a collection of our favorite TV badasses before going around the dial with stops at Restaurant Startup, Under the Dome, the World Cup, and The Strain, which you get from sharing dirty World Cups. True story. We then asked if the What If Egypt Never Fell modern day caper thing, hieroglyph, was worse than jazz. We decided I think it was.
Yeah.
Omar unsuccessfully pitched us Rick and Morty's Rick Potion number 9 for the canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara was the winner of this week's Bidding Game Time. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole on behalf of Tara Ariano.
Happy Badass Week, Mr. Pointy.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Welcome to the Hellmouth.
And Omar Gallega.
I got Cronenberged.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Crate.
You ever wonder what happened to Rick and Morty?
Sometimes. But I'm ashamed to admit, now that they're gone, I'm finally happy.